Hi, everyone. The least travel, but I did stop at Starbucks anyway. Well, the goal of this project was to merge economic and epidemiological data and research methods to provide a new approach to source attribution for foodborne illness. And as Sean mentioned before, this is a collaborative research project with people at the USDA Economic Research Service. This is Jessica Todd and Sandra Hoffman, and my advisor, Peter Berg, and myself from the Agricultural Resource Economics Department at UC Berkeley. There's no relationships to disclose, just like everyone else. And the reason we care about this is because we know that estimating a relationship between food-specific consumption and pathogen-specific illness is very important to facilitate food safety management. Unfortunately, disease surveillance is mainly done by pathogen and is not that well linked to food-specific consumption. There is some data relating food-specific consumption, but this is mainly done for outbreaks, and outbreaks represent a very small share of the overall foodborne illnesses. So estimating the relationship for the overall pathogen-specific illness with food consumption can be quite challenging. The reason we think economists can help in answering this challenging question is because this is a question about food choices, and well, that's what we do. And today I'm going to present a preliminary analysis on Campylobacteriosis, and I'm going to try to explore data on food consumption and disease surveillance and estimate a relationship between poultry consumption and Campylobacteriosis cases. The food consumption data we have is from the Nielsen Home Scan. This data is collected by households that bring everything to their house from the store and scan products, prices, and amounts. The limitation of this data is that it does not contain purchase away from home, so anything that you buy at a restaurant or maybe at the cafeteria would not be in this collected data. Nevertheless, to our knowledge, this is the best proxy for food consumption out there. I actually have worked with scanner data from grocery stores, and it's not as representative as the Nielsen scan. And also does not contain the purchase away from home. So this is definitely one of the best data available out there. The illness data we have is available in two formats. We have outbreak data, but although this data collects information on food consumption, it only represents about 10% of the cases. So with this data, we can actually have a very specific idea of what is causing the disease, but it does not give us an overall picture of what is the relationship between the food consumption and the pathogen-specific illness. There's another data available out there, which is the FoodNet data, and this is an active surveillance, which means that there is a group that goes to about 10 different states, and they go to every laboratory and ask how many cases have happened every day, and it's collected in about 10 states. This is nationally representative. The problem with this data is that it does not capture food consumption because it's so extensive that it would be too expensive. The data we have is available daily. For our preliminary results, we aggregated the data at a weekly level, mainly because the cases in some counties are reported to zero in some days, so we have a lot of zeros. So for the preliminary analysis, we just wanted to look at the overall picture at the weekly level. Our time frame is going to be between 2000 and 2006. Because before 2000, there's too few participants in both data sets. And after 2006, the Nielsen stops tracking anything that is random weight meat. So they only track things that are prepackaged, and all of those meat products that are sold per grams or per pounds are not tracked anymore. Because FoodNet is a subset of the Nielsen data, FoodNet are counties and Nielsen are markets, but you can easily link the markets to counties. So we have what market belongs to what county. Because FoodNet is a subset, we're only going to explore 12 markets where both data sets overlap. We decided to look at Campylobacter because this is the pathogen with the most incidence in the FoodNet data. Well, some things we know about the Campylobacter pathogen is that the time from exposure to illness is about 2 to 5 days, and the illness can last between 2 and 10 days. Some of the symptoms, the least unpleasant, is fever, diarrhea, abdominal cramps. And the prevalence, according to the FDA, they've done studies where they find that there's a 50% chance that a chicken breast that you take home has Campylobacter. And actually, this is a lot more, it's a lot higher for things like liver and other chicken parts, the inner the part, the more the prevalence. The incidence of campylobacteriosis is about 850,000 cases per year, from which 8,500 result in hospitalization and about 76 in death. And because after all, I'm an economist, putting this in economic terms, this would be about $1.7 billion a year. That's how much the illness can cost. The most commonly associated foods are poultry, raw milk, and raw milk cheeses. And actually, the outbreak data confirms this. About 50% of the cases are related to dairy consumption, and about 20% of the cases are related to poultry consumption. Nevertheless, there is still not a consensus about what causes the non-outbreak cases. Actually, Batts and others conducted a survey study where they asked experts to elicit their beliefs about what is the main cause of the disease. And they find that the experts believe that most cases, 70% of the cases, are related to poultry consumption. And we believe this is why this is one of the main reasons it's important to find the overall relationship between food consumption and pathogen-specific illness, because the outbreaks might not be a very representative sample of the overall picture. Things that influence the exposure and those are the contamination coming from the plant, seasonality, both in the production process and in the store, and how you treat the poultry and how you cook it, if you mishandle it or if you take too long to put it into the fridge once you get home. So we know all these things can affect those on exposure. But one thing we don't know for real, like we're not very sure about, is whether the amount of poultry we consume can actually affect the incidence of campylobacteriosis. That is what we're going to try to answer in this preliminary research, preliminary analysis we perform. And I contain myself for putting an equation. I just tried to put it in words. But what we did is that we regressed cases of campylobacteriosis per 100 population. And we regressed this in current first and second lag consumption of poultry. This is measuring kilograms per capita. We include a seasonal dummies, holiday dummies, an interaction for summer and consumption of poultry, and market fixed effects. Why do we include a consumption lags? Well, we know that it is important for us to take into account how the disease develops. We know that there's an inherent gap between the time the household purchases the food. Actually, this will be the time that we are going to see in the Nielsen data. They come home and they scan the product. Then they have to eat the product. We actually don't know exactly when they eat it, but at least we know that they have to either eat it within a certain amount of time if it's fresh meat, which is what we're looking at in this preliminary analysis, or they have to freeze it. And Campylobacter actually dies if you freeze the product. So we have a vague idea of how much time it should take between the purchase and the consumption. Then we're going to have to wait to have a positive lab test. And this day, the day of the positive lab test, will be the day where we'll be looking at the FoodNet data. The reason why I included seasonal dummies and market effects is because we know that there's a seasonal component in the incidence. These graphs show both markets in the Bay Area and in Georgia, and you can see some seasonality going on in the weeks. It's the y-axis has incidence per week. And you can also see how different two markets can be. The reason why I included holiday dummies is because Turkey seems to have a lower prevalence of Campylobacter. And one might expect that during holidays like Thanksgiving and Christmas, consumers are substituting away towards Turkey. So the incidence should probably decrease during those dates. I'm sorry for this, but I felt like the economists would take out my hat if I didn't put the table. But I won't go into much detail. I'm actually going to ask you to just concentrate on the column number 5, which contains all controls. And the seasonal dummies are what we expected. They're negative during times where it's colder, which means there's less prevalence. The holiday dummies are also negative and significant, which means, you know, the prevalence is decreasing because probably people are substituting away towards Turkey with less prevalence. The cells in orange are the lag effects, and the cell at the bottom in green, I computed the total kilogram effect, and the bluish cell is the total summer effect. What we find is that the summer effect is very large. The total summer effect is about 0.1 cases more per 100,000 population, if we take into account that the average weekly case is 0.25, this is suggesting that there is about a 40% more prevalence of campy, but just happened to be summer. The kilogram effect is small. 1 kilogram more of poultry leads to about 0.06 cases more of campylobacteriosis. It's because the weekly consumption of poultry is only 0.21 kilograms. This suggests that doubling the consumption of poultry only leads to about 5% more incidence of campy. The lab effect is not significant, and we were actually expecting to have significant lag effects, but we think that the reason this is happening is because of the weekly aggregation we perform for our preliminary analysis, and we think it might not be ideal. That is why one of our future directions is to try to run similar specifications with a different type of aggregation over time. We actually already started to run these regressions with daily counts. The challenge with the daily counts, even though we do have the data at that level, is that there's a lot of zeros. There's, you know, no cases reported in certain counties in certain days. And so we have to make use of econometric techniques like Poisson regressions. So I think that's one of the reasons why economists can, contribute in this area. We also want to explore in the future, we want to take advantage of the income and price data that we have from the demographics, because Nielsen data allows us to link data households to demographic characteristics and ask more interesting economic questions like, do poorer households are more likely to get campylobacteriosis than wealthier households, or is cheaper chicken more likely to give campylobacteriosis than, you know, more expensive chicken? And also, in the future, we want to add more pathogens, explore whether the exposure comes from different different foods. And there's some lessons we have learned today. We think that both economists and epidemiologists use similar methods, and we can work together pretty well. And we hope that each discipline can bring different perspectives to enrich this topic and build better models. Thank you.